Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Jeff Underwood from the Lakeshore Foundation. So tell me a little bit about the Lakeshore Foundation.
Lakeshore Foundation is located in Birmingham, Alabama. We're a nonprofit organization with the mission of helping people with physical disability and chronic health conditions lead a healthy, active lifestyle. And we do that through exercise, health, wellness, research, and advocacy work.
So, can you give me an overview of some of the programs?
Okay. Programs fall into sort of three general categories. We own and operate our own facilities here in Birmingham. We have a large facility that includes a wide variety of sport and recreation facilities. People from our community come here to pursue a personalized exercise plan that takes into account their particular health condition. That health condition might be a spinal cord injury, it might be CP, Parkinson's, MS, any number of chronic health conditions or disabling conditions. They then develop an exercise program specific to their situation. In aquatics, on the track, in the fitness center, we have a wide variety of outdoor recreation activities. Cycling, climbing, hunting, that we also provide. We have a component of what we do that is a reach out to injured servicemen and women and their families. That program is national in scope, where we use adapted sports and recreation to assist in the rehabilitation and reintegration of military and their families. We have a very active competitive sports program that has junior teams in wheelchair basketball, wheelchair track, swimming, wheelchair tennis, other sports. And our sports program runs from everything up from the recreational level up to the elite level. Where we are helping to train America's Paralympic athletes with regard to their athletic careers. That's a very quick overview of what we do programmatically.
So you struck me as kind of curious with the disabilities climbing. Can you tell me a little about that?
The percentage of, I know in the U.S., the number is around 20%, one in five of the population has some type of physically disabling condition. That number is climbing, not across all components of it, but I think one thing that's happening with the rising rates and the incident of obesity leads to a lot of disabling conditions, diabetes, for example, stroke, other cardiovascular conditions. So And there are some indication that maybe those obesity trends and disabling conditions are leveling off. But I know for the last several years, the number of people who are counted as having a disabling condition has increased. Again, a large part of that has revolved around the rising incidence of obesity.
So in your time working with the foundation, is there any one success that stood out for you?
If we're talking about any one particular individual, I don't think I could put one over any of the rest of them. But if we're talking about success in terms of having an impact as an organization, I'm not sure this would count as a singular success, but there's just a growing awareness among, I think, the healthcare community, who have traditionally been focused on sort of curing disease or fixing broken bones. There's a growing awareness of the need for health and wellness and lifelong exercise programs to be a part of the overall sort of approach to health. That's probably not that one singular success you were looking for, but it's a positive trend. But yeah, I can't think of one thing that really is sort of stands out above the many successes that we see here day in, day out among the individuals that we serve. There are a lot of success stories.
So how do you go about spreading the word about the work of the foundation?
Well, great question, and thanks for your help in helping us spread the word. Obviously, the more people that know about us, really no matter where they live, the more people that know about us, then the more that folks are likely to not only, you know, if people can't sort of seek us out personally due to proximity, if they hear our message of the importance of physical activity for people with disability, and somehow that motivates that person to be more active, or it motivates that doctor or nurse or therapist to prescribe essentially exercise for their patients, then those are good things. But we don't buy a lot of advertising, but we try through we try to get out in front of school groups. We invite clinicians to our facility frequently to show them what we do. We really use about whatever mechanism we can to talk about what we're doing, but in a very targeted sort of way to people who are then in a position to, communicate that to more directly to our population. So strong outreach efforts to educational institutions, to healthcare. We have somebody who's constantly out in the community talking to doctors and nurses and schools, and we're always pitching story ideas to the media, trying to get them to pay attention to our work. So it's a wide variety of strategies, but it's not through paid advertising. That's just not where we've chosen to spend our monies.
So are there any projects on the horizon for the foundation?
Well, we are in the middle of a master planning process, which is looking at our physical space. We have a growing research program where we're trying to put some science behind our programs of physical activity. I think that could very well turn into a project to build to expand our exercise science laboratories. Part of that master planning process, we are considering adding some outdoor recreation elements to our campus. Our campus is 45 acres here in Birmingham, and most of what people do when they come here is to go into one of our buildings to do that activity, our gym, our pool, etc. We have a very nice piece of land, and we may very well develop some more outdoor recreation spaces that would provide yet additional opportunities for cycling, walking, those types of things.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I love to hear about foundations such as the Lakeshore one, because they provide opportunities for individuals with disabilities to have a chance to do something most people would say could never be done. Just giving them a chance to appreciate, get involved with athletics, or what have you, just to continue in their life doing the things they love to do. Disability is far from a limitation. It's an adaptation. Not always to what a person wants to do, but many times disability is simply a matter of adapted thinking. It's simply a matter of looking what's available to you and asking, how can I use this? How can this be something that I can be a part of and still contribute in a meaningful way? Groups like the Lakeshore Foundation are taking the time to think on this very question for their clients, for individuals with disabilities. They ask themselves, how can we innovate? What can we create? And will this be something that really benefits the disabled community? It's fine to have policies and practices on paper. It's fine to say, oh, we're going to do this, this, and this. The truth is, if you stick to it, if you take the time to ask what the disabled community really wants, find out an individual's goals, and to work alongside them, you can help them reach their full potential, especially in athletic opportunities. Fact is, you can be just as great an athlete whether you have a disability or not. You still have intense training. You still have a great game. You still have that all-important sense of community with your teammates. The fact is, it all begins with simply recognizing that things are still open to you, and always will be. It's just a matter of searching them out. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
A Detroit-based cultural arts organization, Heritage Works celebrates the beauty and humanity of African people and world culture through movement, music, and folklore. Heritage Works believes culture is a rich resource for promoting understanding as well as personal and artistic excellence. When children, youth, and adults know their heritage, they raise their gaze, lengthen their perspective, and lift up their expectations for their own lives. Understanding and sharing culture builds a sense of community, develops leadership skills, complex thinking, resilience, and a sense of appreciation, and creates curiosity, confidence, and love. People, especially the young, need to help claim the benefit of this inheritance, the help Heritage Works uniquely provides.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. Earlier in our show, we heard from Jeff Underwood from the Lakeshore Foundation. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Kathy Cunningham. She'll be telling us about Power Soccer. So tell me a little bit about Power Soccer.
Okay, Power Soccer is a game that started back in the 70s, and it was designed for those athletes who were using a power wheelchair and really couldn't play any other sport. And they get on the floor. There's four players in a team that are on the floor at one time. And their object of the game, of course, is like real soccer, is to get the soccer ball down into the opposing goal.
So can you tell me a little bit about your connection to the game?
I'm a parent of a young 22-year-old boy, man, I guess, who has Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And back in 2003, we visited the disability games in Kelowna, B.C., and they were talking about trying to get a power soccer group going in the Okanagan. So at that point, I connected with a number of parents, and I started coaching the Okanagan Thunder Chairs, which is our team that's here in the Okanagan, based out of Kelowna. and I've been coaching a team for the past 13 years.
With the sport itself, is there any modified equipment they use?
Well, this has changed throughout the years. When it first started, it started back in France, actually, in the 70s, and they had an old basketball, and they had sideboards along the gym, and they just passed this ball back and forth. And then it went through some modifications through the 80s, and more countries became involved. BC got involved in the early 80s. And what they had used back in the beginning was they had their normal chairs, their day-to-day chairs, and they put a foot guard. They used to call it a bumper, but that kind of created the idea that they were like driving bumper cars and they would be crashing into each other. So they changed it to an attachment or a foot guard, but it had all different variations. In Japan, in the early days, they used like an old tire. When we first got involved, it was a very large plastic foot guard. And then some of the challenges were mounting them to the different types of chairs, because there's not, of course, one type of power wheelchair. So that's the main adaptation, is the foot guard or the attachment at the front of the chair. Other than that, it's just the soccer ball, which again has changed. Originally, it was a 19-inch diameter ball, which was a very large leather soccer ball, and now it's shrunk down to more of a regular size of a 13-inch soccer ball.
So, in your time coaching Power Soccer, is there any success moment that stood out for you?
Well, it was nice to see the game change, because it became a lot faster game, way more exciting for the spectators. The players were spread out, and it was just an exciting game. And it, from starting out watching it with all the players gravitate towards this huge soccer ball and be huddled sort of in a corner and very little movement, to this fast action game where the ball was flying across the court. That was very exciting. The other one was, we went to our first World Cup in 2011, and my son actually made the national team. So the World Cup was held in Paris, so we went over for 2 weeks, and they had a training camp for the first 4 or 5 days, and then the actual competition. And it was our very first World Cup. Actually, there's only been, I think, one before that. And we came 6 out of 11 countries, which was very exciting, and it was just amazing to see these athletes out there and with the other countries, and seeing the styles of play and set plays that other countries were doing.
So, in seeing all these players come together, can you tell me a little bit about how the athletes respond to the game itself?
Well, when they first get out in the floor, sometimes it's a little, they're a little hesitant, only because if they're in their chair and they see, and sometimes the chairs do come together, the foot guards come together, which is legal as long as it's foot guard to foot guard. But they come out, once they join in the game, it's like they've never been, a lot of them have never been involved in team sport. So they're experiencing team camaraderie, working together as a team, the social aspect of, if it go to a tournament, it's not just out in the gym, there's the lunches, the dinners. It becomes like another family. They get to know players across their provinces or across the country, so they're forming friendships. They're being competitive, and it's just like they found a spot, and they're all equal when they're on the floor. When they're in their wheelchairs and they've got their equipment on, they're all equal. I mean, some have different challenges with adaptations on how to play and maneuver their chair, but basically they're equal on the floor, and it becomes their sport.
So what do you foresee for the future of the sport?
Well, we would like, right now we only have 3 provinces in Canada that have teams. We have BC, Alberta, and Quebec. I've just got a contact from Ontario, which we're very excited about, because Ontario has played power wheelchair hockey for a long time, but we haven't got them involved in power soccer. So I'm very excited. There is a family out there that wants to get something going. Our goal would be to have teams in every province across Canada. And in doing so, we are better set up to get put in application to become a Paralympic sport, which is our goal, is to be able to send a team to the Paralympics in the future. We just need more people involved, more provinces involved. And on the big scope, they need, of course, a number of countries to do that. And we are growing. We're growing all the time.
So if you could send any one message about the need for disabilities be included in sport, what would you say?
I think it just changes a person's life that has a disability, that's in a wheelchair. It just opens up a whole new world, and they just need to get out there and try it. And I think once they've tried the sport, they'll be hooked, and then they'll start building friendships. Their self-esteem grows, their communication skills grow. They belong to this competitive sport, and they love it.
So is there anywhere my audience can go for more information on the sport itself?
There's a number of websites. If they just go on to either Power Football Canada, which is our national website, or in BC, I believe we have a BC Power Soccer website, they'll find some information. Some different countries, if they just go on and Google Power Football or Power Soccer, they'll find it. We were also featured on the Rick Mercer Report, so that's kind of a lighter aspect of the game, having him in a chair and trying it out. That was right before we went to Paris, so that kind of gives them a chance to see someone get in a chair and actually experience the sport firsthand and see our athletes getting prepared to go to World Cup. There is information out there, and we would just love to see more athletes be involved.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Expansion is ever the watchword in disability life. Developing systems that work for you was just fine. But the fact is, these groups, the ones that are truly committed to the work they do, are the ones that are always reaching for the next step, the next level, saying to themselves, we helped this person today, but who can we help tomorrow? And expanding the soccer program, providing an opportunity for individuals in wheelchairs who might never have been out there, might never have enjoyed being a part of a team, being a part of the game. This is opening up a whole new world for them. And it's only fair. Someone can't just come along and say, you can be an athlete because you're an able-bodied person, but you can't because you get around a little differently. It's not right. No one is in a position to say that. Because the fact of the matter is, if one way of the game doesn't work, find another. Find what works for you. And truly, for a person with a disability, it's not just opening athletic opportunity. It's not just giving them a chance to strengthen their muscles or just to clear their mind, reduce stress. No, it's opening up friendships and opportunities, celebrating with friends, being a part of something greater, and yeah, even pushing towards those large-scale events that the world loves to watch. Disability sport is something that goes on day-to-day, every day. Doesn't get the same level of recognition as, say, the World Cup might, but the fact that the World Cup would include a disabilities component does shine some light on what's going on. That's how it should be. There should be as many people cheering for these athletes as there would be for their able-bodied counterparts, and not because, oh, it's great they're doing this despite that they have a disability. No, it's great that they're doing this because they're people who want to play a great game. And they're people who want to strengthen themselves, showcase their athletic abilities. We can all root for our favorite team. But if that team happens to just move around a little differently, what's the difference? Are they not still great athletes? Are they not still people of strength and character? People with families, education, hopes, dreams, potential for the future, creativity. We must ask ourselves, what is the real difference between an able-bodied athlete and one with a disability? I maintain the only difference is in how they play the game. Sometimes those modifications are very, very slight, to the point at which your average person might not even notice. But the fact is, they're just athletes, part of the community, just going and playing in their stadiums, strengthening themselves, training day by day to be as strong as they possibly can. And then getting out there and enjoying some time with friends, maybe a little spirited competition. Disability athletics never lose the spirit of competition. Fact is, teams want to win, and they want to give it their best in the process. But, fact is, some people do tend to view it as less meaningful than the able-bodied game. Why? In what way is it less of a competition? In what way is it less of a cultural experience? A few years ago, I had the privilege of interviewing a representative of the Paralympic Committee who was telling me about how disabled athletes don't get the same endorsements as their able-bodied counterparts. That's one of the interviews, folks, that really stuck with me, in so much as, why in the world wouldn't you want to put your best face forward for these endorsements? An athlete with a disability can just as easily be the best face of athletics as someone who's able-bodied. Fact of the matter is, it's just a matter of taking the time to recognize the strength of these athletes, taking the time to really watch their game, what really goes into it. It's not just a question of the athletes. Those who go out and cheer them on, they're just as committed to this game as they would be to an able-bodied one. The coaches, supporters, the sponsors, they're just as invested in these people. They're just as much saying to themselves, I trained them, now I want them to go out there and give it their best. I want to see them succeed. I know they have great potential, so why don't they get out there and express it? Why in the world would we as a society not want to expand on disabilities athletics? Why in the world would we say, oh, it's fine to have these events, tossing them a turkey bone, keeping it in a little corner? No. We pride ourselves as being a society that's ever growing in our understanding. If that's true, then disability athletics and disability programs should be at the forefront. Equal inclusion doesn't mean greater or lesser inclusion. It simply means make it a part of the tapestry. Write a sports page with a disabilities column regularly. There's no harm in that. You might actually expand your reader base. And what's more, your readers might actually learn something they didn't know before. Anybody can memorize a stat, but to actually learn the mechanics of the different ways a game can be played, that is an educational experience. That is something that's enriching to a sports fan as a person. Truth is, it's an ongoing process. Society is growing. We are learning. We are including disability life more and more. But, like any change, it's a process. It's not something that's going to happen in a day and poof, everything's all good. But each one of us must ask ourselves, what part do I play in that? How can I be a person who truly embraces equality? And what does that mean? Does it mean that I go out and I coach one of these events? Does it mean that I lend my support? Does it mean that I just hear the story of a disabled athlete, how they got to the game, and how it's changed their life? These are the questions that really do resound with me, and I hope some of you out there. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.